Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the next episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Amy Phillips, who played Jessica Arnold. Amy, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. What we'll do, Amy, is we'll start the way we start every episode and we'll go right back. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
Well, I was definitely that child who really loved performing.
Right.
And any excuse, a second child, I think that's quite common. And unlike some of my friends at Grange Hill, I hadn't done any professional acting before Grange Hill, so I was completely green, but very, very keen. And I'd started, you know, branching out from school and doing youth theatre and community theatre and stuff. And so I had no experience whatsoever.
Right. Okay. And did you end up at a stage school or anything like that?
No, I got the audition for Grange Hill because I went to school with an actress called Olivia Poulet, who's a very successful, very good actress now. And she started going up for professional castings, you know, commercials and everything, which to me sounded like the most exciting thing ever.
Right.
And I asked her how she did it, and she said she found an agent in the Stage. You remember the acting newspaper?
Yeah.
It was very much a newspaper at the time. Obviously, it wasn't online or anything.
Right.
So I went down to the corner shop and I bought myself a copy of the Stage and I opened it up, and literally in the first couple of pages I looked at, or one of the first couple of pages, was an advert for an acting agency.
Right.
And I mean, I'm literally like 13 or 14 here. I write a little letter and I put some photos in. Don't tell my mum, send it off. And I know a few weeks later, I get a phone call asking to come and meet them. And at that point, I tell my mum what I've done, and she's pretty cool about it. We go up and we talk to this woman, and I kind of go away thinking, well, I may never hear from her again.
Uh-huh.
But then again, a few weeks later, the audition for Jessica in Grange Hill came up. So it was pretty crazy. It was really a kind of, you know, really was my very, very first audition.
Wow. So obviously, like, because of the age you were at the time, were you a fan of Grange Hill?
Yeah, I loved Grange Hill. I would have described myself as a fan. I think I kind of feel like everyone was, but maybe maybe I'm biased. I absolutely watched it and I was a fan. So yeah, it was proper, you know, proper fairy tale stuff, just to get the audition, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can remember actually my mates turning around, because the audition process went on a while. And I remember one of my friends turning around to me in science and just sort of saying, yeah, but Grange Hill, I mean, that would be a complete, like, I mean, that would just be the most amazing thing, wouldn't it? That would just be like a fairy tale. I mean, I really didn't. It did all seem, you know, crazy, pie in the sky stuff. So
yeah.
It was...
Did you think you would get the part? Like,
No. I just thought it was really amazing to have that opportunity. And I remember Christine Seacombe, who was a producer at the time. I think she came to, we met her, three of us met her at the agency, or three or four of us. And then she asked a couple of us to come and do a bigger audition.
Yeah.
And there were tons of kids there for that audition. I remember the audition process quite vividly, actually, perhaps because it was such an extraordinary thing.
Yeah.
And so when you, I hadn't been to an audition before, and they had this, I can't remember what building we were at, but one of the BBC buildings, and there were a lot of kids in one room, and there was definitely a team from Grange Hill. I think Nigel Douglas was there, one of the directors, Christine, probably a casting director, maybe another producer. Uh-huh. I think it was definitely a kind of team of people and a lot of kids.
Right.
And I definitely remember one of the things they asked us to do was probably like as a warm-up, they partnered us up with another child, and you had to remember 10 things about, you had a chat with them, and you had to recall 10 things. And of course, now I think I probably clocked at the time that they were probably trying to see if you were going to be able to remember your lines.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, I better get this right.
Yeah.
And then we must, and I did, I think I was probably
well done.
But I do remember that. And I also remember that, I guess, well, I say this, I'm hazy about it. I guess we must have read then for the part. And then there was another audition after that.
Right.
And I think both Aidan, David, who played my little brother, and I think Kevin Bishop were at that one as well.
Uh-huh.
But when I listened to Kate, which I don't know. I it's a funny memory, but that, I remember them both being there.
Right.
At this final audition. And I will tell you just something about the final audition, because it was kind of crazy. I turned up with my mum at White City, and I was a long way away from I think it was White City. It was one of the BBC buildings. We'd had a long journey, loads of traffic. It was like a horrible time. It was probably after school or something. Turned up there, really nervous. Obviously, this was the big sort of final audition. Yeah. And when we got there, they'd had a power cut or something. We had some kind of power outage.
Right.
And so we had to go somewhere else. And by now, the time is really ticking. And obviously, my nerves are going through the roof anyway. Yeah. And I'm imagining other kids have got this message, because there aren't many people there. And somehow we didn't get the memo. And so we are legging it back to the tube to get to wherever it was. And you can probably, if you look at a tube map, you can probably work this out, which two studios we travel between. Because so the clock is ticking, I'm panicking, thinking I'm not even going to get there to do this final audition. And the trains are all over the shop. And finally, a tube arrives. And the tube, I'm not kidding, is going to Grange Hill. On the front, you know, there's a real Grange Hill tube stop. And this train was going there. And I remember just thinking, well, that's got to be a sign. You know, yeah, I've got to do it now. Like, I'm going to get there. So that's a true story. It really was. So I guess I could probably work. And I don't honestly think I've ever gotten a train going to or from the real Grange Hill ever since. But it just was very cool. I'd certainly never done before. And it was very cool. And then that audition, I remember, as being the hardest one, much more intense. Uh-huh. We were reading in with other characters. And right. There, I remember there's some, you know, really strong actors there. And I do remember not feeling confident at all that I'd got it.
Yeah, no.
But I had got on that train.
yeah. So you get there then, and you get the part of Jessica, and then you go to like your sort of your first day of rehearsals and stuff. What's it like walking in and seeing these you know, these people that you've been watching on telly, and then all of a sudden you're one of them? You know,
it's absolutely crazy. And of course, you don't feel like one of them. You feel like you're in a funny dream, and someone's going to wake up in a minute and go, what are you doing? Why are you playing it? Being at Grange Hill. I remember real nerves. It was a hugely long journey. I can remember tripping all over. You had to do a read through first of all. Uh-huh. How they used to do it at Grange Hill is, I think you did 20 episodes in a series, filmed April to November, and they would film in blocks. So you'd film, right. I think, I guess five blocks, four episodes a block, and you'd rehearse for 2 weeks and then film, I guess, for maybe longer. Maybe it was two weeks and 4 weeks. I can't quite remember how it went. Yeah, maybe you rehearsed for 2 weeks, filmed for 4 weeks. And that was, I've never had that on TV since, the idea that you had a 2 week rehearsal period. It was just amazing. It was like theatre. And at the end of the 2 weeks, you do like a walkthrough for the cameras. It was so lovely. It was amazing and really good practice and good training. And so the beginning of that rehearsal, that 2 week rehearsal process, was a read through, when you just read through the scripts for that. That's block. I definitely remember tripping all over my words and being all over the shop, and you know, and seeing people like Rachel Roberts walk in and just being, you know, completely, you know, I didn't know whether I remember not really being able to eat and getting home and just being starving because I was just so kind of nervous and excited, overwhelmed. Yeah, so it was crazy. I think that there were some other moments that came later, because when you don't see the Grange Hill, well, it's not even there anymore, sadly, but you don't see the Grange Hill playground at that point. Right. And I do remember having this moment. So we must have been a couple of, like, a weekend rehearsal or something. And there was a little corridor just outside the rehearsal room. And I remember chatting with someone there. And I don't know what tipped me off to the knowledge that the Grange Hill playground was visible through this window that was up high. But someone must have said something. Right. And suddenly there was no one around. And I stood on this chair in this corridor and I looked over the window and it looked onto the real life Grange Hill playground, and that just blew my mind. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, you know, it's like walking into Albert Square or something. I just thought that was amazing. So I guess I feel grateful that I was young enough and naive enough and green enough that it all was so exciting. Yeah. And that was kind of nice in a way. It was, but I was so green to it all, Neil, that I, on the first day of filming, I didn't wait for action. I just started acting.
Right. Okay.
And I can remember the director going, no, you have to wait for action. That is how much I didn't know.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. So you joined in series 17. And you were in year 9 and you were a new pupil to the school. It's not like sometimes they just, someone just appears, you know, and they've obviously been in the school for a while. So you were a new pupil to the school, along with, you've already mentioned Aidan, you know, you played James, your little brother, Arnie, he was more known as to the viewers. But you also had, a full family, because obviously there was David Quilter and Daryl Webster played your mum and dad as well. When I've spoken to people who had that, like, sort of family dynamic on the show as well, they've always said it's great because it gives you character. Feels more rounded. So what was it like getting to work with them as well?
Oh, amazing. Absolutely amazing. David and Daryl were absolutely, they couldn't have been lovelier. They were incredibly talented, incredibly professional. And obviously, Aidan and I got on brilliantly. I still think of him as a little brother of a kind. And David is my telly dad, and it's lovely to have it. It did make a real difference, actually. And I think you just upped your game with the adults as well, because they were so good. But they were also, I don't know whether at the auditions for the adults they kind of said to them, look, you're going to be working with a bunch of kids, right. You've got to kind of be cool with that, because they always were, and they were very very generous to us and very patient with us.
Yeah, because obviously, you were working with, Anna Quayle was there as well. And I always mention Anna Quayle anyone that's on, because I just think that must have been that must have been tremendous.
It was amazing
working with you.
Yeah, she was a total star, and I'd watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang about 6,000 times, and she was everything you wanted her to be. She was brilliant and generous and lovely. I didn't have as much with her, as definitely not as much as some kids did, but I had a lot. I worked a lot with a teacher with Dina Davis, who she played Martha. Was it Martha, her character? She was a real influence on me as well. She was incredibly nice and very, very talented. And I think she was a real influence on me. And they all kind of looked out for you a bit as well, which was cool. But I had a lot of scenes with her as well, so I think that...
Brilliant.
She was great.
Brilliant. Okay. So Jessica was, she was this new pupil. They were a well-off family, the Arnolds. And Jessica was very different to the other kids, purely because the way she spoke didn't fit in with the narrative of most of the kids of Grangehill. But Grangehill did that every so often, didn't they? They brought someone in who was different, and they were a well-off family. But Jessica and Arnie had been to public schools before, but I think, don't know if their family were on more hard times than they'd been in the past, and that's why Jessica was sent to the comprehensive.
Yeah, I think they're kind of doing a bit of a 90s recession thing, I think, probably. Again, sort of, the old, getting the topical sort of storylines. I think that was kind of the,
and
probably where it came from.
She was Arnie's big sister. No, it was unique, this one, I think, because when there'd been brothers and sisters before on Grangehill, they didn't have a lot of screen time together, usually. You didn't always see them. But one of the first times we see Jessica is she's actually giving grief to Arnie and telling him he needs to grow up because he's not in his cosy little prep school anymore. But that happened quite a lot. You had quite a few scenes with him, and like they've been in the past with like Jackie Wright and Robbie Wright. They didn't tend to do a lot together. They might talk about each other, but they weren't on screen together. And I just think it's nice that you had not only the family, but you actually got to work with him quite a lot.
It was really nice, and I think it does help you kind of flesh out the character and believe in them, and Aidan was so cool and so nice, and he was very young, but he was he had a great sense of humor. He was just we always got on really well, and I have a little thing. I think that helped. I knew that dynamic. We also used to, I think we quite often, we lived fairly near each other by coincidence in Southwest London, so we often used to travel home together. So yeah, it was a real gift that I got on with him so well, and with the actors who played our parents as well.
Yeah. Now there was your first big storyline that Jessica had was she gave the idea of introducing the drama club to the school, because we had one in our old school, which a lot of the kids are all groaned about. you go into a new school and you start talking about your old school and what are you doing? You know what I mean?
You didn't know. straight in with a bit of Shakespeare. They'll love this.
And then that obviously developed then. Because you saw that Jessica was quite clever as well, because she was saying, well, could she be involved? And Mrs. Keel was saying, well, what about your homework? And she comes out with the line of, well, I haven't been set any homework that hasn't taken me longer than half an hour to do. And I'm just saying, oh my God, shut up. What are you saying? Yeah. So then she gets sort
I
of
I used to think that quite a lot about her life.
She gets involved there, and then there's a cracking scene with Joe. One of the first scenes you had with Martino when he calls Jessica Jess. She goes, actually, Joseph, my name's Jessica. I'm a little blimey.
But I've forgotten that. Oh, that's great.
And then your first big storyline comes out of that when they were auditioning for the play, or sorry, they were actually rehearsing for the play, and the lads ended up leaving during an improvisation because they were sick of the way they were being treated. But the girls carried on with the drama group, and then the lads come back in. And do you want to sort of explain a bit more about what happened with this storyline when the lads came in and it all, there was a bit of a ruckus and stuff?
Yeah, is this when she's groped?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember sort of bits and pieces about that day. I mean, everyone was pretty sensitive about it all, but it was quite, you know, it's funny, isn't it, to think of it now in the context of sort of today's world. You know, it was a very sort of, I guess, a forward-thinking storyline. It was a brave thing to tackle, wasn't it? And but I remember everyone was, I can remember everyone was, yeah, I don't remember feeling that it was a sort of, I think because everyone was so nice and like, these were all my mates. I don't remember finding it massively difficult or I remember, and also I don't think we didn't know, I'm not sure we knew sort of 100% what happened or who had done it.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I do remember, the thing I remember about the day, weirdly, is I had to cry, and I'd not really, you know, as I said, I wasn't very experienced and I cried before on screen. So they gave me a thing called a tear stick, which kind of makes your eyes smart, basically.
Yeah.
And my eyes are quite sensitive, and they rubbed it under my eyes and then put some glycerine tears on, and I just couldn't open my eyes. It was so, it stung so much. And you know what it's like on TV, they're like tick, 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 right, let's go, cry, 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 action, action, action. And I'm like, I can't even open my eyes, let it cry. And in the end, I do, and this is probably the right thing to do, I think they just rolled the cameras, and I just had to, had to open my eyes. I'm not, or maybe I didn't, I don't know what happened, or I just had to sort of cry and have closed eyes, I can't remember, but that was my first experience, and last, I think, with a
right.
tear stick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do, I remember sort of, yeah, it was, it led to some really great scenes, and I think I was probably a little bit self-conscious about the fact that I had to put on another blouse that didn't have buttons and was slightly not done up or whatever. I remember kind of being a bit like, this is awkward, but it was all, yeah, it was fine. It was a good storyline, and I think I was grateful to have, you know, the scenes that came from it.
Ian Rushmere was on a couple of weeks ago, and he said he didn't know at first who it was.
Yeah, I don't think we did. And it was, he's so lovely, and it was funny to think of him being this, doing this awful thing. But no, I don't think we did know who it was. And maybe that was kind of, I think that was, I presume, maybe they didn't know at the time, but also I imagine it just kind of added to, you know, the tension of the scenes. I think that was probably the idea.
But I also think it makes the acting from the other people look better, because if they're saying, I don't know who it wasn't me, then obviously, they're doing it, aren't they, going along with it, not knowing it's them. So then that caused Jessica's mum and dad to want her to leave, but Jessica was like, well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to leave school. I've only just got here. I don't want to go to another school, and I have made friends, and the majority of it.
Yeah, I think that was about her. She was, I think it was quite good that they played her as, you know, not, she kind of got to be herself, didn't she? She kind of got to bring her whole self to school. I think that was kind of cool, and I think they felt that she, I remember the producers talking to me about it, that she, that young girls had quite a good response to her as a character, because she was strong.
Yeah, you know, definitely,
she
definitely.
Was kind of, this is who I am, and I like doing Shakespeare, and I kind of speak my mind, and I don't know, I think there was, she was quite a sort of, yeah, I think her strength was kind of cool, I think.
Brilliant.
And yeah, she was no, I'm staying at Grangehill, lucky for me.
So then, you know, that we talked about the drama group, and the girls ended up doing a play about, you know, the relationships between the lads and the girls, and I love it. I when you watch that episode of them doing it, I just think it's great, because you see the likes of Nina Fry and Margot Selby just being lads, and I love that episode. It's brilliant. Because obviously,
yeah, it's just... was a lot of fun. And yeah. I do remember them all coaching me. They were like, "You've got to be a bit more like Grange." Yeah. You're sounding too posh. Which was fun. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of fun. We always had a lot of fun in that. Yeah. And it was always great when you got to kind of go out and do something very different like that. And it was interesting as well. You know, we were doing those kind of broad characters. We were doing the Shakespeare. You know, so it was good. It was yeah. interesting. So a lot of learning.
Yeah, so they ended up doing it in the park, didn't they? Because
yes.
Mrs. Munro said, it's brilliant, but we won't be able to do it in the school. They'll shut us down. And then it all came out then about Brian, which we've talked about. Brian was the one. He apologised. And he did it because he thought Jessica fancied him, which was just bizarre.
Not the way to go.
Yeah, no. Hopefully Brian learns as he got older. That wasn't the way to go about it. And Jessica just wants it left because she didn't want to have to go through it all again. Which
yeah, and I think that's you know, that's a thing, isn't it? There's always a thing, I think, with abuse, is that it's not I'm so pleased it's a world now where it's easier for people who've yeah. been abused to come forward, but I think that definitely. Is always a challenge, is that having to live it through again and having to kind of so yeah. I think that was truthful, I think, that she doesn't necessarily want to go through it all again.
Definitely. And then after the drama group, Jessica then joined the choir. And yeah. and you got to go to East Germany.
Yeah.
Which must have been great as well, like getting to do
it
that.
It was amazing. Especially as I'm not a singer, so no choir is ever to invite me to sing anywhere out of this country. But no, it was a great crack. It was good.
Yeah.
Very cold.
Right, okay. And Jessica got drunk while she was over there. You know, she lied and said that she was 17, which, again, you know, girls do that, don't they? You know, and lads yeah. do it as well. You know, yeah. especially if they like Jessica and they look older and they can get away with it as well.
And does Joe kind of come to her rescue then? I've got some memory of him yeah. kind of like...
Yeah, she was drunk and being sick. And it's Joe that sort of looks after her and takes her. And then
look at that. She's being sick and he's still
and stays with her the next day when she's got that massive hangover.
That's romance. That is.
But she was and she was able to perform in the
drunk coffee.
He's got the whole world in his hands, I think was the song, like, which
yes, yes. Seems
strange yes. for a high school choir to be singing, but there we go. So then we move on to series 18, and Jessica's in year 10. And this is, I don't know if we first really see the first proper signs of the love triangle with Joe and Paula. I know there'd been a little bit in the series before, and Paula had joined
when the drama group. Doesn't she beat me up at some point?
That was, when the rumour had come out about Joe groping her. About groping Jessica, so that had been in the series before,
right? Yeah.
And she told Jessica to leave it alone. But this is where Joe sort of starts saying, "Well, I haven't." At the start of the year, he says, "I haven't been seeing Paula," and then they meet Sarah Jane, Paula's little sister, and she says, "Oh, I thought you were back on because you were in our house the other day." so you don't really know. And then Jessica goes away on a field trip, and Joe rings her up. She said she was talking about meeting these other lads from this other school. So Joe's then feeling a little bit down, and Paula asks him out again, and he says, "Yeah, okay, let's go." And then when she comes back, you know, the girls told her that he'd been out with Paula, and so it sort of cools a little bit, and they're still, but Paula and Jessica are still sort of arguing until the rugby match that they have on the fundraising day. Now, were you had you ever played rugby before?
Literally never in my life. But I love saying, especially to boys, that I have played rugby on TV. I do like that. And we definitely had some intense coaching. I think there was some hasty coaching. And I also, there's a hilarious shot where I go to kick the ball. But obviously the kick that's filmed, what actually happens to the ball, is not my kick. Right, okay. So you kick it in a really bad way. And then it goes flying over the, or not over the bar, close to the bar or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was again, another fun experience, but no, absolutely no skill whatsoever.
Right. And so that's it. And that's kind of where the argument between Jessica and Paula ends.
Yes.
I think, because Jessica tackles Paula but then helps her up, and they sort of shake hands and at the end of the game and sort of forget about it.
Yeah.
And then, as you've said there, Jessica takes the final kick and misses. You know, not too Hollywood style at all. If it was Hollywood style, it would have been.
If it was Hollywood, it would have gone. You'd have
been
one.
She'd have been carried off, wouldn't she? You know.
Yeah.
then Jessica and Joe sort of do become a bit of an item, Jessica goes to the go kart, and Jessica's really, really good at it.
Yep.
and loves the speed until she crashes. Was that one actually you then? Because you said the
I remember being whisked off once the track had closed in the evening to practice, which was great fun, and I loved it. But I think it's a long time ago, but I think they had a stunt double to do the actual crash.
Some of the driving is definitely you, because there was a mounted camera, it looks like.
Yeah, there probably is. But I'm sure anything that looks impressive is not me at all. And it was probably the first time I'd had a stunt double as well, which is really always, I guess, part of my rugby stunt double, of course. that was very cool. And it was amazing. You know, Martina and I got on brilliantly, and we had a real chemistry between us as well. So I think it was always and I got on actually also really well with Abby, who played corner as well. So that was always funny. She'd beat me up and then we'd walk off arm in arm or something. But actually, I think sometimes when you get on really well with someone, weirdly, I don't know quite why this happens, but sometimes maybe because you feel very comfortable around each other, it's more convincing that you dislike each other. And it can also go the other way, that you can have a great chemistry, like with Martino and I, you can have great chemistry in real life, but it doesn't translate on the screen. But I think it did. We all did laugh, and I think it did. They were people, but you know, people used to ask a lot about Martino.
Yeah.
But what's he like?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I definitely one of the best looking couples they'd ever had on Granger, without a doubt. And so then, in that series, the big main storyline, it wasn't one of yours, but it was the HIV and AIDS, and there was like the kids were in a HIV workshop.
Yeah, which I think we did in real life. I think we did one in real life.
So right.
I think maybe even the actors, I think that the people that gave us the workshop then actually also did the acting.
Oh, right, okay.
I think so, but I definitely remember the workshop.
Yeah, I mean, because again, you know, kids telly, you know, bringing that in and making kids aware of it.
Yeah, and also I don't know if so much had been done as well on, they'd obviously imagined by that point there'd been dramatization of HIV within relationships, but I don't think, you know, that sort of within a domestic setting, within a family, like your mum or dad, you know, dying of HIV related illnesses because of, you know, blood transfusion or something like that was probably hadn't been done quite as much. And I think it was very powerful and really.
And like, I do like that, because when they're having the HIV workshop and the kids are getting asked, you know, how can you contract it, someone mentions through a blood transfusion, and they say to them, well, yeah, that wouldn't happen now, but years ago when the blood wasn't getting, you know, checked and whatever else, and then that comes out then that's how Lucy's mum had contracted it. Obviously there was so much ignorance in the program, because there was so much ignorance in the world. And I think they do that really, really well in the program.
Yeah, and I remember I have a memory of a scene actually, that we were all in the canteen, and I can remember Francesca being there, Francesca Martins, maybe Mel Joseph, Belinda Crane, and myself. It might not be that four, but that's in my head.
That is the four. That's the four.
Is that it?
I know what you're going to say. Yeah.
And there's a sort of question about sharing a bottle of Coke, and I remember feeling, and we're a bit funny about it, we're a bit like, oh no, you know, it's okay, and I remember feeling uncomfortable about that, because I knew it was such a silly way to behave, but I also think it was very, probably, as in real life, Amy felt uncomfortable, because I was like, oh, that's so dumb, but actually, I think it was probably very truthful and very realistic that these kids wouldn't have all just immediately shown complete loyalty. They would have, you know, they would have shown their ignorance as well, you know, and I do think that was probably a very realistic and, you know, truthful portrayal of that ignorance, you know. So, but I think, doesn't it, does Francesca, does her character, maybe she's better about it?
Yeah, so, Rachel then goes to, because Lucy asks if she can have some. And
that's
and
right.
Jessica says, yeah, okay. And she gives it it. And then when Lucy passes it back, Jessica says,
she doesn't want that. That's right.
You can keep
right.
that. So, so Rachel then goes to grab it, but knocks it over Lucy.
Oh,
then,
right. That's and, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Lucy then kicks off about it.
Yeah.
But there were, because there was other things where the girls wouldn't get in, or some of the girls wouldn't get in the swimming pool. And
that's right.
The lads wouldn't get in the swimming pool.
Is that why we had to do a horrendous scene in swimming? I mean, that was just
it.
absolute nightmare. I just remember we were all just like hiding behind the nightmare, all having to parade around in swimsuits. What a nightmare.
Yeah,
that was why.
Is that right? Okay.
Suffering for our art.
What I like about all that, you know, having the HIV workshop as a scene and then everything else, the kids watching wouldn't have realised that they were actually being taught anything.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, even though they were learning from all that.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have realised because they would have just seen kids acting the way kids act.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but the storyline was telling, you know, don't be stupid. You're not going to catch it from swimming, you know. And he says, I think they say at one point, you'd have to drink a bucket full of saliva to even have any kind of chance.
Yeah, funny enough, I think I remember that. I think that hit me at the time. Even though I was you know, better educated about it, I think than Jessica, because I was a bit older, but I do remember that fact, and I'm sure, as you say, that will have gone home to other kids as well.
And then they move on from that storyline, and towards the end of that series comes in that they're going to make a promotional video of the school, and Jessica's made chief editor of the video, but they want it to be sort of real life. Mr. Robson doesn't want it to be real life, and doesn't like the video that they've made. So they come up with a thing where they're going to still make their own and sell it. So they have a viewing in the Arnold's house of it, and then Mr. Arnold appears and says, "You're not doing that. You're not selling that. It'll make the school look really bad." But luckily, Arnie and his mate Rick, because I think Kevin Bishop had left at this point, shall we say. So there was another lad, Rick, was there. They'd got a copy of it and was trying to sell it back to them, but Jessica just took it off and said, "Look, we've already got it, you're not selling it." And then that sort of storyline sort of stopped. And then we move on then to series 19, which starts off, Jessica's ill is all we know. With some kind of mystery illness, which brother Arnie is convinced she's just being lazy, and there's nothing wrong with it, basically. Yeah. The thing I like about this is you don't just see it from Jessica and Arnie's point of view. You see what her parents are going through as well. That's shown quite a lot, you know, the mum and dad talking to each other, but the bit when the dad goes into school and talks to Mr. Robson, and, you know, he's on the verge of a breakdown, talking about it, and I just thought that was done really was done so well. Was it your choice that this was going to happen, or
I think what happened was, and by the way, David Coulter and Stuart are such good actors, I can imagine that scene would have been amazing. And they will have had that adult sense of, well, of what, you know, the vulnerability of, you know, that of, you know, how you would feel when your child is ill, which I just think is the worst thing for any parent. But what had happened was is that they may have already had the Emmy storyline somewhere around that. That's completely possible. In fact, it probably was. But I had wanted to, I think what happened was, I was trying to remember this. I think I had said I'd loved being in Grindel, but I wanted to, I think my GCSEs were coming up, or my A-levels, or one of the two. And I think I'd felt I couldn't do both at the same time. So I sort of talked to Christine about, saying, I think I'm going to have to leave to do that. And she said, well, look, why don't we, you know, we've done such a lot with your character. Why don't we give you a storyline to write you out? And I think that's where the Emmy thing came from. Whether it was something they would have done anyway, either for me or someone else, I don't know, but that was definitely where that came from. So that's the origins of that story. But what there's a couple of times, I think, in your career as an actor where you act in something, or you portray a character where there's a storyline that really, really seems to, you know, affect either a lot of people or a certain amount of people. And I can still remember the letters we got about Emmy, hundreds of letters of girls particularly that had been through and I still feel guilty to this day that I didn't have time to write back to them. I used to really try and write, answer as many letters as possible. But let me say now, they were so helpful and so moving, and you know, it obviously was and is something which affects people, you know, massively. And I, the other thing I remember vividly is we had a family come on set one day. Again, the girl had I think come out, you know, she'd come out the other side, she was doing a lot better, but she'd had ME as well. And we started shooting, they were on set. They think they maybe come into rehearsals as well. They'd been really helpful to me in terms of how to play it. And they were on set and we did a scene, I think a scene at breakfast. And we, you know, shot it a couple of times, shot it from a couple of different ways, and then we were ready to move on. And then the woman came up to me and she said, you know what, you're not tired enough. You're not exhausted enough. You've got too much energy in you. And I went, I think Stephen Andrew directed those episodes or was certainly producing at the time. And I remember saying to him, look, you know, this is the feedback here. They were really great. They shot it again. So it was more true.
Yeah, because I often wonder when you get something like that, you know, if you do have to do research into it, but obviously having those people there who experienced it must have been a different level of research, wasn't it? You know,
it was really helpful. And it's always really helpful, I think, to, obviously, as an actor, you've got to do a lot with your imagination, but it's always hugely helpful to meet people who have some experience or some very direct experience of something.
Yeah.
And also, I think as an actor, you are constantly kind of, there is a constant sort of recorder in your head. You are, the way you watch the world, I think you are, things stay with you in a very sort of visceral way. And that's why I guess you're able to then reproduce them later. But when you have someone right there, right at the moment of when you're rehearsing or doing those scenes, that can be extraordinarily helpful. And as I say, it was very, very humbling and moving to get that response. And it was obviously, you know,
definitely
a very devastating illness.
Yeah, definitely. Because the thing about that, I mean, I was, what, when that was going on air, I was 20, 21. Mm-hmm. Like I would be in the house when Grange Hill was on.
Yeah.
And that was my first dealings with Emmy. I'd never heard of it. So, you know, Grange Hill again being sort of, you know, that I say it all the time, groundbreaking, and bringing these two storylines in, for not just for kids to learn about stuff, but, you know, I was 20, almost 21, and I was learning about it, and I just think that's brilliant that kids were in it, and you got to see that it wasn't just tiredness, you know, because it was affecting Jessica's mind. She couldn't remember people that when she saw pictures of them, she was asking if she should know them and stuff. And I just think it really, really, really well done. Another really, really well done storyline. I mean, that was the thing with Grange Hill.
And I don't think you're alone, by the way, watching Grange Hill in your 20s. I think a lot of people watch it because I think it just was a good, good drama. I think people watched it way into their 20s, because I know that, because that was the people that we had. people we had reacting to us. It was a pretty wide age span, actually, and I think that's a credit. That's a real credit to the writers, and also just to that kind of brilliant sort of genesis of the whole show from Phil Redmond, that he wanted to write something for kids that wasn't what adults thought kids did, but what kids experience, which is everything, isn't it? It's everything from the lighthearted fun and sort of monkey business to the worst of times, you know. It's just that's real life, isn't it? So that just goes through the whole of Grange Hill's story, really, that they never shied away from that.
And then Jessica then goes to California then to And at that time, Arnie had come round as well to, you know, he changed his opinion on it, because he'd seen how ill she was, and he'd also been there when the lads had that ridiculous notion of, oh, she's going to America, let's get her to send us some jackets that we can sell. A typical Grange Hill money-making storyline came in, and Arnie walked in and told them to get out, because clearly she was really ill and that she wouldn't have any time to do that. Like, so then we move on to series 20, and then you were only in sort of the back half of that series, sort of the last 10 episodes.
I think I'd fully left to go. I think they'd written me out, and I didn't really see a way because of exams and stuff that I could come back. And I think what happened, I was thinking about this morning, my memory is that I was at the, they used to have a cast party at the end of every season. I think I was at the cast party, and I think they approached me then and said, you know, look, would you be interested in coming back for a bit? And I think by this point, by the time I'm doing those episodes of Grenshell, I think I've left school, but I don't know, maybe not. It's all a bit of a blur. What year is that? What year are they
filming? That would have been filmed in 96. It was on air in 97.
Yeah, so I would have been. I took a year out after school, so I would have been out of school then. So that was quite nice in a way that you know, having been able to focus on it a bit more, and I was starting to work a lot more outside of Grenshell as well. But I remember I have really fond memories of that bit.
I am, because Jessica came back to school the same day that Dennis came back to school after his accident. Yeah. But then it's one of them, I think, because not everyone can have a big storyline the whole time and so forth. Like the first few episodes, you were sort of there. You got Josh going to the hockey match because street hockey was a big thing.
That's right. I remember there's a lot of fake tan.
Not real,
sadly.
Because you'd just come back from California.
California/Miami.
In inverted commas. And then towards the end then, Jess became the editor of the school magazine.
That's right.
And decided that it wasn't going to be a normal school magazine. It was going to be more like a Heat or Hello or something like that, which included a male centerfold in the magazine. And
that's all coming back to me.
The first edition of the magazine just goes by hitch-free, nothing's wrong. And then they do the second one. They get Jamie from the cafe to be the centerfold, and then a parent rings up asking why their daughter's got a picture of a naked man on their wall, which she'd got from the school magazine.
Half naked, it was great show. Half naked.
And you just think, surely I was watching clips of this the other day, and I thought surely Jessica was savvy enough to realise that wasn't going to get, they weren't going to allow that.
I think she was just so distracted by the good looking centerfold that she was just fully distracted from sense at that point.
And then it all got banned. Mr. Robson told her to go and collect it, and it was the first time we saw Jessica be really stroppy with anyone really in authority, and she goes, no.
I know, didn't Stuart and I have a real set to you, didn't we? I remember.
I kept my side of the bargain. I jazzed up the school magazine, is what Jessica says. You can go and you can go and collect all those yourself. But yeah, because they had there was another thing with Mr. Hankin, Lee Corns, who I just think getting to work with him must have been brilliant as well.
Honestly, they were all amazing. But he was a comic as well. Yeah. So he was just so funny. You know, very self-effacing. You just occasionally sit with him and he would just crack joke after joke after joke. Such a lovely man, such a brilliant actor, incredibly funny. No, he was just brilliant.
Because it's the first time we really see him sort of lose his temper with anyone as well, Mr. Hankin, because it'd been the problem
with me.
Page.
What did I do?
Yeah, so the problem page in the magazine had said about getting bullied, and the response to the letter in the problem page was stand up to the bullies, and a girl had come in with a black eye. And Mr. Hankin says, you know, what do we do here when the response is to stand up to the bullies? And they do, and they come in with a black eye. What would you reply to that one be? And then he just walks away then, and Claire's the girl on the magazine, turns to Jessica and said, try to warn you. They made up a story about Miss Carver being pregnant in the magazine, and the governors were talking. So the governors were talking about that.
I'd forgotten how terrible we were. Gosh, we were really very controversial magazine.
And even in the late 90s, there was a talk about the possibility of having an unmarried mother on the staff. Like, it was a massive scandal. And it just shows you how much the times have changed. Like, so Jessica goes to the governors and apologises for anything that they've caused. Episodes.
Quite right.
Series 21, you were in two episodes.
Yeah, I think I had kind of probably left, and then they sort of asked me to come back and do like a little stint here and there, and which was always lovely. Is that like the end? like
that was the end. So that was Arnie. She'd gone away to college, but had come back on a study leave weekend. And that was when there was a little conversation between Arnie saying that him and Dylan split up because she'd been two-timing him with Chris Ben Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turned up at Dennis's going away party because he was leaving as well. And that was sort of it for Jessica Arnold on Grange Hill. So what did you do then? Obviously, like from looking at IMDb, you did sort of carry on acting.
Yeah, I did. I did lots of, especially around the time I left Grange Hill, actually. I think during my time in Grange Hill, I started to do bits of telly and what have you. And it was funny, when you've been a child actor, you had a very long time in the business, you do work with people like right at the beginning of their careers. I was thinking one of the first things I did was an adaptation of a novel called Sophie's World, and it was directed by Paul Greengrass, who went on to do all the the Bourne Identity and stuff. It was kind of funny, you often got to work with people who then went on and became massive directors and what have you. I think that year, actually, even before I'd finished Grange Hill, I did my first couple of feature films. I did a film called The Misadventures of Margaret, which was shot out of New York, which was amazing, and a working title film, What Rats Won't Do, with lots of just incredible people.
What Rats Won't Do. Sorry for interrupting you there. I looked at that cast the other day, and I was like, wow, like unreal. But also, Chris Jory is in that. Chris Jory was the last guest that I had on this podcast, because Chris Jory played Mr. Knowles in Grange Hill for the series, so he was in that as well. Now, your part in What Rats Won't Do, was it one of the main parts? Because when you look at the cast list on IMDb, you're really high up on that cast list.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's not a film I've seen. I know Natasha...
Natasha McElhone.
That's the one,
I had a good line in. I played Sally Phillips' little sister before, Natasha McElhone. And so, I had some amazing big sisters on telly. She was, she's just an exceptional actress and lovely, lovely, and the most beautiful woman in the world, I think. just crazy, crazy beautiful, and very, very humble about it, but she is. Uh-huh. And she was, that was just amazing. And also I did those films back to back as well over that summer, and Parker Posey was in both of them, who I was a real fan of, and spent a lot of time with her, and she's just crazy, but in a brilliantly creative, amazing way. So yeah, it was just extraordinary year, a whole year. I think I also did the first season of Night School then, which was a children's TV series that the team from Maid Marian, the other brilliant kids series had done. So it was a spoof. And so I was doing, and actually What Rats and Misadventures were comedies as well. So I was moving a lot more into comedy, which is probably my meal ticket for most of my acting career, that I was generally doing comedy or comedy dramas.
Yeah.
And I guess you often find something that you feel like you can do, and then you tend to get cast more and more in that genre. And Night School was had Roger Lloyd Pack was the deputy head teacher, and Peter Jeffries and Joe McCollum, and just amazing guest roles. So it was it was a really steep learning curve at that point, working with very funny people. Harry Enfield was in What Rats Won't Do,
I'd never heard of Night School until I was researching this, and I looked at it and I thought, I need to watch that. Like, genuinely, I saw it and I thought, that sounds amazing, that program. When I saw the cast as well, I thought, I definitely need to watch this program.
And that was up in Manchester as well. So we got to film that up in Manchester, which is really good fun. I've worked now quite a few times in Manchester. So that was a nice, starting to work in, filming in America for Margaret and stuff. So starting to sort of work in lots of different places, which is very cool.
Yeah, and you've done The Bill and Cavanagh QC.
Yeah.
And you did My Family.
I did the very, very, very first episode of My Family. So it was weird because everyone was meeting for the first time. It was the first, and they film in a very sort of American sitcom-y way. So you kind of rehearse all week and then you do a live recording on the Friday. Nice. I don't think our episode was the one that went out first, but again, that's quite typical. The very first episode you film is not always the one that you put out first. But it was the first week, so I got to see everyone kind of making their relationships and their bonds, and you know, you could see that it was going to be a hit. And then I had to leave after a week. It was just a guest role, but I remember feeling very kind of. And years later, I did a guest on a series called Life According to Bex, and the creator of my family did come up to me then and had a really sweet moment. He just said, thank you so much for being part of that very first moment. So that was really, that's not they had anything to do with me, but it was sweet that he kind of remembered and we had a nice moment.
Yeah. Now there was something there just because of the name of the film. My other wheelchair is a Porsche. That's on your IMDb.
Yeah.
What was that one called?
It's a short film by a director called Ravi Kumar, who'd had a really interesting career. He trained as a doctor and then decided to go into film. And it was a relationship between a young guy in a wheelchair and a nurse. It was very sort of beautifully shot, very kind of art housey kind of movie. But yeah, and I did lots of short films. It was very beautiful, very beautiful. I think she had lost a baby and he obviously had an accident or whatever. Obviously he was going through his own journey, we were meant to be a few years apart, not, you know, he was in late teens and I was perhaps meant to be 20s or something, but and it was just having, I think, a connection between the two characters. It's amazing doing short films because obviously you are working with people who are really trying to prove, you know, trying to show what they can do as filmmakers. Very exciting time in someone's career to work with them. Yeah.
Brilliant. And then I have to ask you about Absolutely Fabulous. You're in an episode of that. Were the people on that as bonkers as you'd expect them to be?
They were amazing. I always found it really hard to do that whole kind of like networking thing. You know, you'd be at a party or something and taught yourself up. I never found that very easy. And I remember I'd done a TV series called Rescue Me, which David Nichols wrote, who's an amazing novelist, and that had been an amazing experience. And it hadn't been, I don't think it had been picked up. It was Sally Phillips was in the lead, and I was having a bit of a moan about it to this woman at a party of Sally Phillips. I was like, oh, it was so good, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I suddenly went, I sort of paused and I looked at her and I went, you're going to tell me you're like the head of BBC comedy or something, aren't you? And she's like, yep. And I was like, real man. Anyway, the next day on Monday, I got offered a little cameo on the Absolutely Fabulous Christmas special. So there, it shows you. I never once got a job from schmoozing at a party, but having a good old bitch and a bone got me a gig on Monday morning. So, you know, young actors out there to try it. It was very generous of her. And I remember it just being the most terrifying experience of my life because I was in awe of Jennifer Saunders and Jonah Lumley, and they were entirely and utterly are comedy heroines of mine. Uh-huh. And the first thing the director said to me is, he went, I was just playing a paramedic, you know, I had a couple of lines of nothing, but his first thing he said to me was, don't try and be funny. And I think it's because, and he was right, you know, he was absolutely right. It was a lot of the time you're playing very straight characters, you're serving, you know, these comedy greats. But, you know, there's nothing like someone telling you not to be funny to like just sort of immediately, it was like, feel like you've got a nervous tick where you're just going to make jokes the whole time. And I remember we had a moment, it was in an ambulance. I was kind of, you know, trying to bring Jonah Lumley, you know, she'd, you know, taken too much champagne on, I can't remember, and we're driving along the ambulance.
Something you would have expected Patsy to do, basically.
Yeah, totally. Based on something. Yeah. And there was a long wait, and I was shut in the ambulance with Joanna and Jennifer, and they were trying to do a crossword. They're both, you know, incredibly bright, and sort of they're doing this amazing kind of what's it called, cryptic crossword, which I'm completely hopeless at. And they were looking for a clue, and like some guardian angel moment, the answer just came into my head, like a sort of, I don't know, just some amazing, joyous moment. And I just turned around and I went, it's not Evergreen, is it? And they both went, yes, you've got the clue. And I remember just feeling like I'd won the FA Cup, just feeling like, you know, I'd helped out these are brilliant, brilliant women get their crossword clue, and then just watch them for the rest of the day, impro, and just be hilarious. And just watching Joanna Lumley as well, just how she, a lot of people are very nice in this business, but I just remember thinking how she really took, she really went the extra mile with people who were watching and who think she's so amazing. She would just go over and she's like, oh, look at those ladies over there, let's go and talk to them, you know. So it was an amazing, a very, very, very inconsequential tiny part for me, but amazing, amazing day, amazing experience.
Brilliant. And so then your last sort of entry on IMDb is an episode of Doctors in 2012, and then there's nothing else after that. Did you stop acting?
Yeah. Well, sort of yes and no. Right. A couple of things happened. I have four children now.
Right.
So,
wow.
So from 2008 onwards, there's a lot of children arriving. So that was a big change in my life. But also I did a lot of theatre as well, which is obviously the, I guess is the kind of the bit that's invisible from IMDb. And that was something I really fought quite hard to get into, actually. It was something I really wanted to do. I was always quite restless, I think. I didn't like waiting around for the work. I liked, so I started doing a lot more, I started creating my own stuff to a certain extent. I, you know, wrote quite a lot of live comedy sketch stuff with Olivia Poulet, and I would go up to Edinburgh quite a bit, and that's where I met my husband, actually, up in Edinburgh. Right. And actually, I remember that's when I reconnected with Francesca as well, because she was that was the sort of beginning, the early days of her comedy career. So that was really nice being able to see her doing some of her early gigs in London and Edinburgh, and so yeah, so there's a sort of chunk of theatre, and I got to, so that, and I did manage to get into theatre more, which was great, and did a lot of work around the country. And there's a America bit that comes in here, so I'm just trying to work out where that comes. So I think I got to about, I was kind of in my late 20s, and I met my husband, who is American, and I was a bit restless. I think I was restless with kind of, I'd been in the business a long time by then as well. Of course, when you start, when you're so young, I kind of felt like I'd done an integration. I'd been in the business about, I don't know, 15 years or something. And I always felt really lucky to, I think the thing that when I look back at that, at my acting career, is that I feel incredibly lucky about the people I got to work with and the jobs I got to do. They were almost without exception, I just felt very lucky. I just felt like I did really great stuff, not stuff that was always super successful commercially, but was always just a really amazing experience. Filming with Peter O'Toole in Canada, that's Rock My World, that's one of my films on there, and I'd done about six films, and but I never quite broke that glass ceiling where I was working all the time. Right. And I think that was, and I didn't like the bit where I was hanging around. And so when I had this opportunity to go to America, not really, not for my career, but for, to with my husband, I just kind of thought, this is probably going to be pretty terrible for my career. But I was really ready for a new challenge. And I knew we wanted to start a family and all the rest of it. So we went and had this amazing adventure in LA, and I was represented, and I did, you know, get some fantastic opportunities out there. But one of the things that did start to happen is I'd always been really interested in directing, and I had done a bit at university, and obviously I was producing my own stuff up in Edinburgh and things. And then that sort of started to come alive a bit in LA when I wasn't as busy with that. So that, and writing, I started writing more, and so that was really nice to grow that a bit, as well as I say, having this kind of crazy adventure out there. And then I started having kids, so there's this kind of, so that's a, there's a whole sort of period where I and I come back to England, and in the interim I come back at about 2009, so it's a horrible time to go back in the industry. It's, there's right. been that big. And I think the industry really, really changes around now as well. It's even tougher than it ever was. Uh-huh. There's certainly less, certainly around the bracket, age bracket I was going into in my 30s, they very much wanted people who were very established and big names. And so, and by this time I had left my big, big sort of commercial agent for a much smaller boutique agent. So, they had quite a job really to get me working again. And that's when I started doing things like new tricks and but also a couple more kids come in here. But the other thing that is growing is directing, and I direct I get an opportunity to assist Lisa Sperling at The Rose on an amazing production called Donkey's Years of Michael Frayne play and get to meet him and work with him. And I'm sort of really, I'm working in the creative learning department at ATG. So I'm coaching a lot more, I'm teaching a lot more. And I was, that was a real passion of mine. Something I'd always really wanted was work with people and use acting as a kind of confidence tool. And I start a weekly class at my local arts centre teaching that. So it's kind of, but it's also turbulent years as well in terms of I don't quite know what I want to do and do I want to do more acting, kind of go and do acting and I think I like it, but then I really like directing and then I've got children and young children and, you know, I don't think this is uncommon. I think for mothers that you reassess at this point, you sort of think, how is this going to work? And obviously with a big family with four kids, there's even more questions about what's really feasible. And the acting industry is, you know, it's not very family friendly, acting or directing. You know, it's a tricky thing to negotiate. And so I was all a bit of a, you know, I was loving bringing up children, but I was I think it was definitely the hardest time in my career for working out where I was going to land. And I think it was very evident to me that if I pursued a very linear directing approach, that it was not jive very well with having young children, because you really need to be free to assist on lots of people and to go around the country doing your own stuff and all the rest of it. So that was difficult. So I really was like, what is this going to be? And I remember really, really struggling with that. And then a job came up as an artistic director at to run my local art center, which I loved and was already working for quite a bit. And it just felt extraordinary kind of answer to my prayers, really. I was just like, this is everything I want. This is a chance to, you know, to work with visiting professional companies. This is a chance to produce community theatre of a really high standard and direct great productions, to teach acting, to give people from sort of, you know, 2 to 102 amazing opportunities. And very and the thing I think that really appealed is having worked for so long in an industry that's so exclusive. And I don't mean that just the sort of the representation piece, that's a whole sort of another story. And I'm so pleased that, you know, as an industry, we are becoming so much more inclusive in that sense. But I mean in that because there are so, I mean exclusive in that there are so few jobs available, that it is a very small amount of people who work very consistently and people hold on to those jobs very tightly. Uh-huh. And it's very, it took me years to break into theatre. It's very hard to break in. And I guess the plus side to that is our industry is amazing, like the excellence, you know, is extraordinary. Yeah. You get to work with amazing people, and I miss that sometimes. But the downside, as I say, is loads of people want to be creative. Loads of people want to express that in some way. And here was an opportunity for me to take on this massive art center and really say to anyone who comes through the door, either we can offer you amazing artistic experiences at a really good, we try and make it very inclusive in terms of our price, but also if you want to do something, if you feel you've always wanted to, you know, work behind the scenes, or you want to act, or you want to sing, you know, we can say yes, we can do that. But creativity is not the preserve of the few, it's sort of important to everyone. So that was really amazing. I can just remember the day I got the job just thinking, ah yes, this is waiting. And but I was still going up for stuff here and there when I didn't have a young baby. And funny enough, not long after I started there, I did it was very becoming much, much rarer. And I was doing a little cameo on a Ramesh Ranganathan series called The Reluctant Landlord. And I just had such a brilliant day, so much fun. He's amazing, so much fun with him. And, but it was funny, I left the filming and I just went straight back to my office in the art center. And I thought, that really is my home now. And I don't know, maybe as my kids get older, and if there's ever a point when, you know, I feel like I can leave the art center, it'd be really hard to, because I love it so much. But maybe I'll go back in a bit more of that linear directing route. But that's really where my heart is now, is directing. I just love it with such a passion, and I feel really lucky that I've been able now to do it with my whole heart. But I guess I'd say to anyone out there who's kind of wanting to get into the industry in some way, you know, it's rarely the route you think it's going to be. And so I think sometimes do you think are going to make you a big star aren't, and you know it's funny, there will always be, and you'll hear this from actors of, you know, extraordinary A-list actors, you know, there's always a kind of journey and there's always highs and lows, but I think you've just got to trust that if it's something that you really love and have a passion for, you'll find your way to it in some way, even if, you know, you might not end up earning your living from it anymore, or you may do for, may not, but if you just, if it's important to you, then there are lots of ways to keep it very close to you, I think. So yeah, so that was why I kind of drop off IMDb, a sort of combination of theatre and children and directing in the theatre. But yeah.
Okay, so you've mentioned the Arts Centre a few times there, but you haven't told us where it is, what it is. You know, let's get it out there, Amy. Come on.
Sorry, well, shouldn't I? It's the Lantern Arts Centre. We have a great website. We're on social media. We're in the heart of Raynes Park in southwest London, and we're really proud of hopefully creating and continuing a place that is very warm and friendly and inclusive, and we're doing all kinds of great art there of different kinds, and you know, we have lots of wonderful practitioners and lots of people we have people come and visit and perform there. We have, you know, a lot of our own work, so yeah, I mean, you know, who knows, maybe one day we'll host a Grainshaw reunion there.
Yeah, definitely. The people that organize the reunions, listen to that, because there's a place there that you can use. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Okay, are you still in touch with any of the cast from Grainshaw? I know you've mentioned a couple of them here, like
funny, when you're young, you kind of just all scatter to the wind, and as kind of as you should, because everyone's pursuing their own kind of thing. But I always say, to this day, I feel exactly the same, that anyone that I work with on Grainshaw, it would always be a joy to run into, and I feel like we'd go back to just how it was then. So so many amazing people. But I do, some people I run into a bit more than others. Also with social media, I'm not on it a lot, but I definitely managed to, you know, reconnect with a bunch of people, which has been really, really nice, and hear what they're up to. Francesca, I probably have seen the most recently. I went to see her amazing show at the National, which was, you know, a real moment, just that sort of, what a kind of high in her journey. A friend, that's Francesca Martinez, that's her show, All of Us, if you get to see it, I hope it will tour or grow, because it's just incredible. And I just also recently saw, which was really nice, through seeing that show, I connected with Lorraine Woodley, who's also a fantastic director and choreographer and movement director. She works at the Brit School, so that was really nice. She was a Grainshaw alumni as well. So yeah, I am, and I hope, I was thinking I would so love, I must organise this, to sit down with David and Aidan. I feel that we're way overdue, pint down the pub and a catch up.
Brilliant.
But yeah, always a pleasure to see what any of them are doing is always really lovely. Brilliant. So thanks. Yes, more connected, but not, I don't get to see people as often as I should. Blame those four.
Okay. Now, so we are coming to the end of the interview, Amy, and I have got a few questions that are all about Grainshaw. Okay, now last year it was announced that there's going to be a Grainshaw movie, and yesterday, or you know, certainly in the last couple of days, there's been huge news on that one. The fact that it's written, Sarah Sugarman, who was the first Jessica in Grainshaw, played Jessica Samuels, is going to be directing. What do you think of the idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. And actually, what is it they're talking about? They were saying they might, they want to focus on that. They've kind of given a bit more detail, haven't they?
So they're saying that there was a character called Jessica Samuels, who was sort of like the first sort of militant pupil, shall we say, at the time, very strong-willed. A bit like Jessica Arnold, to be honest, a bit strong-willed still for what she believed in. But I think she was, I can't remember if she was expelled or asked to leave or whatever, just because the way she was. And I think that was when sort of Phil Redmond sort of realised, hold on a minute, we could focus something there. She wasn't particularly well-known in the programme. She wasn't in it for a very long time, but sort of what happened to her character and looking at it that way.
And I mean, I think obviously there's a huge nostalgia for the original cast. I think that, you know, I think that sounds like a great idea. And yeah, gosh, why not? I think it's a great idea to do a film.
And if you were asked, would we see a return of Jessica Arnold?
Oh, I don't think I would be asked. But, yes, of course. And I should add as well, being a female director, I'm delighted to hear that they are looking at a female director. Yeah. I think that's brilliant. And No, I think, of course, I think it's very unlikely I'd be asked, but they'll focus on the original cast, but of course, yeah, I'd be honoured to be any part.
What do you think Jessica Arnold's up to these days?
Oh, she's a CEO for sure.
I can't see any other thing, to be honest.
Well, maybe she's retired to the Bahamas now, I don't know, but yeah. She definitely went on and into business.
Maybe she's gone back to California and bought her own place out there as well. This is a question I don't normally ask, but this is every time there's a new episode coming on, I do a guess the guest competition on social media and I'll put picture clues on. And the person that guesses first gets to ask the next guest a question. So this is this question, and I always feel like I'm on Going Live or Live and Kicking or something when I say this. This question's coming from Clive 1970 on Twitter. Okay. And his question is, if you had the chance to appear in another era of Grange Hill, which era would it have been?
Oh, that's really, what a good question. I think it's, what a good question. It has to be the earliest of days, doesn't it? Just because yeah. I also can't imagine how it, you know, it was so exciting, that TV series, for everyone who watched it, but I can't imagine how exciting it must have been to be part of that original cast and crew and sort of, I'd quite like to have been on the other side of the camera, actually. I think I'd quite like to have been in the original era, but, you know, in the writing or, you know, directing or something, because I just think they must have really felt that they were doing something very groundbreaking and amazing, and I think that would have been really exciting. But yeah, it's hard enough. However, I do have a real for the kind of you know, sort of Gonch and Tegs and that kind of Justine, because that was kind of what I watched, so I'm a little torn, but I guess in my own way I kind of got to live that dream a little bit when I walked into the rehearsal room and all these parents were there. But yes, they're probably the original.
Brilliant. So other than Jessica Arnold, who was your favourite character on Grange Hill?
Again, that's a really good question, and I can't I think I did have a real soft spot for the whole Justine and Tegs kind of storyline, I think, and in a way it was kind of fun, you know, that maybe in some little way kind of Joe and Jessica had a bit of a, you know, a Grange Hill romance as well. That was cool to be in the, you know, the halls of Grange Hill romances. But for me, I think they were kind of my era, and
I think everyone was rooting for Justine and Tex, weren't they? Everyone was, who was watching it at the time.
And maybe it was the whole will they, won't they kind of. It was so cool. And they were such good actors. And so I think that probably,
Brilliant. And if you couldn't have played Jessica Arnold, which other character would you like to have played?
Oh, someone really kind of, really bad. Like someone who was like one of the real... Someone who's getting into all kinds. I mean, she was such a goody two shoes in lots of ways. I think I would have quite fancied one of the real bullies, someone who was beating Paula. Beating someone up.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, then. So, then the final question, Amy, is why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
I think it is to do with the shared experience thing, that so many people watched it because there wasn't the amount of there wasn't the quantity of TV on for children then, and so what you had was a small amount of drama that was of an enormous, you know, it was a real quality, and that you kind of, I guess people would record things a bit, but essentially at, you know, what time Grange Hill was on, 5:10?
Round about then,
everyone you knew was sitting watching the telly at the same time, so I think it's a sort of combination of the quality of Grange Hill and how well written it was, but also this kind of shared experience, that, you know, how you have that sort of nostalgia when you know with your school friends, you know, you talk about the school you went to or whatever, but I think it's kind of everyone kind of went to Grange Hill. It's kind of the shared school we all went to, and I think that, and I guess you get that in a very intense way, you get that with your fellow cast members, because you have this very unusual shared experience that only, I don't know how many Grange Hill pupils are all together, but only a sort of handful, I guess, relative to the rest of them. Population, it's a real handful of people who were pupils at Grange Hill, and I would always feel very lucky that I was one.
Brilliant. Oh well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your experiences and your insights into playing Jessica and what it was like being on the programme. It's been great speaking to you. I've really, really enjoyed it. So thanks again for coming on. And for anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.